The Fan.
Network and KFAN.com. 1 minute, 47 seconds past the hour of 3 o'clock Central Daylight Saving Time. We welcome you back to the Monday edition of the Bumper to Bumper Show on a rather wintry Monday afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. My name is Dan Barrero. I host the program. Gardzi is the producer of the show, and we are delighted that you chose to join us on this particular Monday afternoon. Generally, after a Vikings game, especially a Vikings debacle, it would be pretty much 3.5 hours of savagery, 3.5 hours of primal scream therapy. Today, though, that might be put off most of the way until tomorrow's broadcast for reasons that I think should be probably pretty obvious to most of you by now. Sid Hartman, Chad's dad, has passed on. I still don't believe it. I think there are probably a lot of people still having difficulty accepting the possibility. We kidded about it on this show many, many times over the years that he was going to outlast literally all of us, that he was indestructible. I've told the story before, but it's been a while since I have. I lived downtown Minneapolis about maybe 3.5-4 blocks from Target Center. And I'm leaving my apartment, making the short walk, and I'm approaching Target Center in front of me. I'm at a light. And I see, crossing against said light, into traffic, this older gentleman who gets clipped by a car. Not going that fast, the car wasn't, but nevertheless, he gets bumped. He gets clipped and knocked to the ground by a moving automobile. And then it occurs to me, I said, that's Sid. And I did what anybody would have gone, oh my God, is he okay? And I'm not making it up. He got up, brushed himself off, looked back at whoever the chumbalone was who hit him, and just kept walking into the front entrance of Target Center. And at that moment, I think is when it first crystallized in me that nothing's going to stop him. That's how it felt. We're going to do our best to offer up Sid's stories throughout the course of this program. I have several more myself. Even as someone who spent a lot less time around Sid once I left the newspaper than I ever had before, and someone who clearly was not as close to him in more recent, the last decade, than many people, including our 5:30 guest this evening, Patrick Royce. But there are stories. There are several. But I thought I'd open with that one because, yeah, it is true that when I taped interviews pre-phone, I had one of those. I was all, you know, I thought I was with it, and wow, I had one of those little mini micros, you know, like that weighed maybe like a 16th of a pound.
Awful small.
And you're like, this is impressive. It's not bulky. It's, you could put it in your pocket. It's not cumbersome. You don't even need a microphone. The microphone is attached to the actual recorder. It's like, well, that's the cutting edge stuff to do. Meanwhile, Sid would walk in with the tape recorder from 1957, whenever it was. I'm hoping to find out when that started from Chad Hartman, who's going to join us at 4 o'clock, according to the Borton Volvo scorecard today as well. But, that was Sid. Unmistakable. That was the trademark. Two things I think made him, were his trademarks. One was his indestructibility, and the other, the big tape recorder with the big microphone. And the likelihood, we used to kid about this all the time too. There was a 50-50 chance that as he was interviewing someone, he would actually be listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times it would be, who's the next guy I need to get in the locker room? So he might pay attention, he might not. In fact, I think over the years there were a few athletes who played with that and occasionally swore just to see if they could get a rise out of him or he even notice. Maybe they would speak gibberish just to see if he was even observing it. But that was Sid. Not going to lie, man, we battled a lot over the years, a lot. But I was saying to somebody earlier today, in fact, it was a text to our pal Sammy Sigelman, who's reached out for the first time in a while. It was very nice of him to do that, too. And even if you battle with him about a lot of stuff, and I did, disagreed with a lot of things, there were a lot of resentments, there were a lot of things you had to sort of fight through, he was irrepressible. So he still sort of, you even if you were angry with him, you couldn't, he could not be ignored, I guess is the best way to put it. And that larger than sports life quality is, I think, a big part of the reason that you've got generations of folks who, again, may not all love everything that he did or wrote, may come from a completely different sensibility and philosophy, but they say, well, but he's undeniable. He was everywhere. You can't possibly think of ignoring him. You can't write Minnesota sports history without including him in it. And to that end, we hope to do a little bit of that justice. Bud Grant will join us next segment. It's a two-part interview. We'll play part one when we return, and we'll play part two probably sometime in the 5 o'clock hour. We plan also to chat with Ben Lieber, Monday regular. A little bit about Sid. The only significant departure from the Sid Ode to a Dead Guy emphasis today will be Lieber attempting to explain the inexplicable yesterday at the People's Stadium. Maybe it was true that a wounded falcon is a dangerous falcon.
They must have been real wounded.
Maybe it was the bird's revenge on Lester Bagley. Another kind of bird's revenge, a la the Eagles in Super Bowl 52. There is no explaining it, but Lieber will at least, he was there, so he will help us perhaps get a handle on it or at least give his own reaction to it. I mentioned my former radio partner, Chad, is going to be kind enough to join us right about 4 o'clock today, which is very much appreciated. We have not, I don't think we've not been on the air here since we went our separate ways within the station. I don't think we have anywhere else as well. He's got a lot better memory for things like that than me. But if not now, when? And the fact that on a day like this that he's feeling what he's feeling, he's willing to come on with us is very much appreciated. If you're going to talk about Sid, you got to talk to Louie. I mean, you could say that about anybody in Minnesota, any important story in Minnesota sports, but this one in particular. So Louie will join us at 4:30 today. We'll chat with a very underrated guy when it comes to Sid Hartman conversation, because a lot of people out there, general public, might not know this. They might not even know the name Bob Hagan, or if they do, they probably know it a little bit through us. Media relations maven, who, by the way, whose last name I misspelled in my tweet, which I apologize for. But he will join at 4:55. And Hagan's got a million Sid stories and spent countless hours upon hours upon hours with Sid. And so we look forward to that visit. And then I mentioned Royce. He is scheduled to join us at 5:30. Obviously, Chad works for another radio station, CCO. Royce still has affiliation with the KSTP brand and the Juggernaut and so forth. And the willingness to come on today on a day like this and not make it about brands and what station you're a part of or who you're affiliated with is, again, a testament to Sid's stature. And so that's another reason I'm very much looking forward to those visits. And it's sometime after, either before or after Patrick part, our conversation with Patrick will include part two with Bud. To be honest with you, we taped the Bud interview right before the show. And if we had more time, we could have gotten more time. Bud was just getting loose, to be honest, which says something. He's 93. But we had to start this show because the interview began just about 2:35 or so. But we got a lot of good stuff from Bud as well. We'll mix in emails throughout the show. I don't know if I'll have a chance for phone calls because we're pretty guest intensive today, but I'll definitely keep an eye on emails and tweets as well. Are we putting a grand in your hand today?
We are going to try, yes. Okay. Stefan and Wixon Jewelers want to give you a shot to put a grand in your hand. It's our national cash contest. Text the keyword bank to 200-200 to enter. Text bank to 200-200.
Sid would understand that. You know, it's because some people say, oh, God, you have to throw in that part of it. It's kind of crass. It's kind of commercial. Sid understood.
We'd give away some butter knife steaks if they wanted.
The crass
silver
commercial part. Yeah, being pretty important to the entire radio and news.
Considering college this fall? Life may feel different now, but Anoka Ramsey Community College is still close to home with affordable online courses. Work toward a degree or take general education courses to transfer to any university. Why pay high university prices for online courses when Anoka Ramsey offers a high-quality, transferable education at a fraction of the cost? Reveal your possibilities at Anoka Ramsey Community College. Apply today at anokaramsey.edu.
You get a whole lot of something with Farmers Policy Perks. So much, I'm going to have to speed things up. You can get new car replacement, so if your car is totaled, Farmers will pay to replace it with a new one of the same make and model. Like reuniting with an old friend for the added benefit of that new car smell. So it's really new car and new car smell replacement. Get a whole lot of something with Farmers Policy Perks. Start with a quote by calling 1-800-FARMERS.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Now for the legal something.
Optional coverage not available in every state. Only available with select Farmers branded policy, subject to terms and conditions underwritten by Farmers Truck and Fire Insurance Exchanges or affiliate.
Who's the fan?
And now it's time for Ode to a Dead Guy.
What must it be like to know somebody for 75 years? First of all, it starts with the obvious. You got to have astonishing longevity for that to be a possibility, especially if you, when you first meet, one of the two individuals is 18 years old. Say, that's in itself remarkable. But that pretty much describes the length of time that Sid Hartman and Bud Grant knew each other. And to that end, when we were putting together the list of people we wanted to get on today's show, you will not be surprised to find out that Bud would be at the top of the list. He was gracious enough to join us right before the program. We'll play part one right now, and I think we began with my asking Bud how he heard the sad news about his friend, his best friend, Sid Hartman.
Well, I was up in Wisconsin at our place up there, and I start getting phone calls. And up there, we don't have newspapers anymore, and we don't carry the, other than local news, it's hard to get other news, so I start getting phone calls. And that's how I learned about the passing of Sid, although I had been in touch with some his family and friends that he was not doing well.
What was your initial reaction? What went through your mind? What was your gut like on that at that moment?
Well, you know, if you've lived long enough, you've dealt with your parents passing, your family members, children or whatever. It's a different experience for everybody. And Sid, being literally part of my family, it's hard to take, although it was not expected. When you get to be 100 years old or you get to be 93 like I am, I mean, every day is a bonus and you could pass any time. And your friends, you never get used to this grieving process, but you've gone through it a number of times already.
You know, I'm sure you've heard that part of what seemed to happen with Sid was, as his son Chad said, I think very eloquently, COVID did not kill his father, but COVID definitely changed the habits that even at his advanced age was so much a part of the life-affirming part of his life, which was being out, talking to people, doing his work, whatever. And obviously in this COVID period, he was unable to do that. And I think everybody was concerned about the time when Sid was not able to do his job anymore, what impact that might have on him. Did you worry and think about that?
Well, I recognize it because Sid was a perpetual motion person. I mean, he had a schedule that he would stop at the university every day, stop at the Vikings every day, stop at the Twins every day. He stopped at, you know, other activities during the day, and he went from one to the other to the other to the other. Well, when you take all that away from a person with that much energy and that much thought process that goes through every individual meeting he has or somebody talks to, it slows you down. Well, I think the key thing that kept him going was his activity and his ability to visit with different people four or five times a day that kept him mentally alert and physically able.
Bud Grant is our guest on The Fan. You have spoken a couple of times in the last few days, and even before this, about the most fascinating part of your relationship with him is how little you guys outwardly seem to have in common in terms of interests, backdrop, backgrounds, etc. Have you ever offered up in your own mind, figured out how it had seemed to mesh, the two of you seemed to mesh to the degree you did, despite all of those differences?
Well, it goes back a long way, and it really kind of flowered when, in college, I went, Sid and I spent time together because we had no place else to go, and my wife was a part of that operation, and we were dating at that time and got married when I got out of college, of course. But Sid has been a part of my family forever. I mean, Sid is my longest, relationship in my lifetime. He's been in my life longer than my parents or any of my other friends or family. Sid and I have been close personal friends, if I can steal his phrase, for as long as longer than anybody in my life, and we have kept that relationship not because of mutual interest in our profession, but just as a friendship. He knew my kids, my wife, my family. He knew us growing up. He knew all the decisions that I made. I knew all the decisions that he made. We discussed those many times between us, and not for public comment on it, but just we helped one another along the way, and we hit a chord that I think was very important. He was a very trusting person, and you could trust Sid with anything. His integrity was beyond reproach. Things we talked about never appeared on the program, never appeared in his newspaper, never appeared in other conversations. It was just a friendship kind of a relationship.
How, you know, as someone who clearly got to know, it's probably true, Bud, that you knew Sid better than anybody else knew him. Now, maybe Chad would disagree, but certainly given the amount of time you guys spent together and the way you describe it, you got to know each other really, really well.
We were a great friend before Chan ever arrived on the scene.
That's right.
So it goes back to, 1940s, and I don't know what bonds people or friendship, but I think it's trust and we had fun together. We shared a lot of experiences. Nothing, extraordinarily on the sports scene or on the national scene, but just friendships. Now, you're lucky in your life if you have, a couple of close personal friends. And I had one in Sid Hartman, and I think he probably felt maybe the same way, that we could sit down and just enjoy one another, not trying to impress one another with anything that we've ever said, what we thought, what we did, but just enjoy the company of Sid Hartman. And we were total opposites. I mean, Sid was not athletic in any shape or form, but we had shared a lot of experiences going and growing up experiences. I mean, things, that happened when I was in college that were, major things then, just how I was going to pay my rent, or, and Sid's covering all the sports that he did. He was a great high school reporter at one time. I mean, there are probably not a town in Minnesota that Sid doesn't have a plaque in somebody's house that he was the athlete of the week on Sid's sports radio program on the radio, and he sent out many plaques and suitable for framing, he used to call them, that he would pick out, and if you were one of Sid Hartman's athlete of the week, you got that certificate, and I guarantee it's hanging around in a lot of homes in Minnesota today.
Given your closeness, what can you tell us about Sid that you think you understand that maybe a lot of people who certainly know of him and even got to know him some can't?
Well, there were no secrets with Sid. On the other hand, he was very, when I said integrity earlier, Sid would hear something or say something, or I mean, be around some people, would talk about something, and all he did was banked it. He didn't report it necessarily, but he put it in his memory bank. And 20 years later, it would pop up because he remembered the conversation he had. He never reported it, but it was in his memory bank and in his background of understanding all the sports. Now, he loved the University of Minnesota. He didn't graduate from high school, but he loved the university. I don't know where that came from. He was a Cub reporter and a stringer, they called him in those days. He'd run the scores back to the newspapers or call them in, and he'd make many stops during the day. And he just had a background of everything that went on in the state of Minnesota, particularly on the University of Minnesota. And then as the pro teams came in, the Lakers and the North Stars and the Vikings and the Twins. He had a background of everything, so anything that came up, Sid had some insight as to what was going to happen, and he had the instinct of a reporter that he knew things that were about to happen, so he was in on the ground floor of everything, and he also had a base to which to report what he was doing, and if Sid said it, bank on it. It was true.
In part two of the interview with Bud Grant, which will take place sometime in the 5 o'clock hour, he actually offers one of his own theory on why Sid, above all else, seemed to be loyal to the University of Minnesota, as loyal as he clearly became to the pro team, starting with the Lakers. And certainly Vikings way high. He offers an interesting theory there. And we get into more about the relationship between the two of them in part two. We wanted to give you a sample early in today's show. Want to remind you, if you're just joining us, it's pretty much an ode to a dead guy, as in ode to Sid, throughout today's broadcast. Bob Hagan, media relations maven, will join at 4:55. Patrick Royce is scheduled for 5:30. Chad Hartman is scheduled to join us at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. And we also, when we come back, we'll deviate. We'll have a little bit from Ben Lieber on Sid, but our only decent effort to get to the bottom of what ailed your Minnesota Vikings yesterday will be with Mr. Lieber. When we come back, I have to retell, speaking of the large tape recorder story, the day that I saved that large tape recorder.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that large tape recorder got an extra, I want to say, 10 to 15 years because of me. Which I occasionally reminded Sid of, and he very conveniently and quickly forgot about it.
Sure.
About the day after I saved him on the big tape recorder controversy. But let's get a pause in here. We will chat with Nacho Lieber.
Considering college this fall? Life may feel different now, but Anoka Ramsey Community College is still close to home with affordable online courses. Work toward a degree or take general education courses to transfer to any university. Why pay high university prices for online courses when Anoka Ramsey offers a high-quality, transferable education at a fraction of the cost? Reveal your possibilities at Anoka Ramsey Community College. Apply today at anokaramsey.edu.
You get a whole lot of something with Farmers Policy Perks. So much, I'm going to have to speed things up. You can get the claim-free discount, which gives you money off your homeowner's policy if you've been claim-free for 3 consecutive years. Also applies for 3 successive years, 3 years straight, and what's known to insurance fans as the claim-free three-peat. Get a whole lot of something with Farmers Policy Perks. Start with a quote by calling 1-800-FARMERS.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Now for the legal something.
Not available in every state. Only available with select Farmers branded policies, subject to terms and conditions underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or affiliate.
This is very strange, Garzy. I'm looking up at my TV screen. I've got, I think, Fox 9 on. How many times since we've had Ben Lieber on the program have we also been about to see the start of a National Football League game?
Yeah, tip off about 20 minutes from now.
That's coming up at the top of the hour.
On the Plus, by the way, if anybody wants to listen to it.
Is it on the Plus?
Yes, it is.
And that's Kansas City Buffalo, is that correct?
Sure.
Do I have the right teams?
Could be.
I know Kansas City's one of them. You know, we'll know.
You are correct.
Ben Lieber will know. Is it Kansas City Buffalo coming up on Fox for a matinee National Football League game on a Monday night?
Dude, I love it, man.
Yeah, this is great.
I actually forgot. The funny thing is, I didn't forget that it was tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I just forgot the game time because I talked to our old friend Heath Farwell today, and we were talking about the game. And
yeah.
He was walking into the stadium there in Orchard Park, and I just knew that there was a game, but I forgot it was coming up right now. So I'm excited to turn the TV on when we're done with this little conversation.
I mentioned this last week. We had the Tuesday night game. I like the idea far more than Thursday night football. I like the idea of, if I'm being really honest about it, I'd have no problems if the NFL said, we got too many games on Sunday anyway, so what we're going to start doing is we're going to have Saturday night football, Sunday night football, Monday night, and Tuesday night. I don't think it would be overkill. That's always the question about, well, do you carry this popular game? Do you run the risk of actually annoying people and taking away the specialness of Sunday if you start mixing up that many different days of the week? What's the best future approach? You think the league is onto something here with maybe holding on to the Tuesday night idea, or do you think it's just because of COVID and it'll never be that way again?
I think that they run into issues on, especially on Saturdays with college.
That's true.
I mean, if you're a football fan, you kind of want the sanctity of Saturdays to be for college. And
all
even,
right, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday then. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I mean. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. How about that?
I would go Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I could do that.
It's better than Thursday, I think.
I do. I'm with you. By the time it's Thursday, I just want the break.
Yeah.
I just want the break. I want the gradual ramp up to whatever the next Vikings game is, and I want that process. I don't want it to be stopped by some usually poor matchup on Thursday night.
We're doing basically an ode to Sid throughout today. I want to get to that with you in a minute. But you are our only I guess, escape valve from that. And I don't even know if anybody would consider it an escape valve, given the degree to which the Vikings stunk yesterday. I've not heard you on this. Do you have a theory? Do you have an explanation? Are you done with the club? Because I don't think there's much redeeming quality left after what took place yesterday against Atlanta.
No, I'm certainly not done with the club. I mean, there's a lot of season left, and I'm not saying that because I think that, I'm holding out hope for a playoff run and all that stuff. I think at this point in time, and really this is the mindset should have been just like, all right, let's just focus on this next game and see what happens. But, you know, I'm just going to try to really enjoy each and every matchup. You know, now it becomes for the next game, okay, well, how do they look coming out of the bye? Did they do anything when it comes to lineup changes? Are there different roles with coaches? Is there any movement within the organization? I think we're all kind of wondering what's going to happen over the next 10 days to 2 weeks. And then when it comes to the game, it's like, well, let's just earn some pride back and beat the Packers and kind of spoil their season. So you kind of become spoiler now, and you get to be the thorn in people's sides. And yeah, if you can get a win there and, you know, pluck off a few more just for fun, you know, get a win in New Orleans, get a win at Tampa, you know, those little wins will be kind of fun throughout the season. Now, the other side of that is all the people that are draft watching are saying, like, no, what are you doing? Yeah. You don't want to win those games now. You want as high a draft pick as possible. And I certainly understand that, too. So I would just like to see the team compete and compete at a high level.
So, you know, there's not any question that when a team changes its coach, there's always the chance that they're going to feel like, what the hell, let's go for it today. You know, if we feel like we're starting over, we don't lose the losses, but we'll pretend that we're 0-0 again. And, you know, we got a new coach. It's our opportunity to say that we're really not that bad and let's go out and do something. Yet I have to believe that what happens once the game begins has a big impact on how far a team in that position can carry it. And so to that extent, I can't imagine a worse thing for the opposing team to do than to throw an interception, literally, on the first play from scrimmage. After doing something Zim never does, and apparently, according to his postgame comments, will never do again, take the ball after winning the toss, the interception. Because then, I got to believe, Ben, that's what opens the door to, hey, you know what, this might be fun today. Maybe we actually can seal this thing. And it felt like it sort of built on that, and you could see, you were there, but it looked from the Barca as if the energy level kept going up on the Atlanta sidelines, as if they're saying we're undefeated and we're just going to keep rolling here. And the Vikings, it just looked like there was almost nothing left. I didn't see much sign of faith, emotion, fun, frivolity, anything from them.
No, you know, going back and looking at it in retrospect, I do think that there was a hangover from the Seattle game, and the team did not look, you know, overly enthusiastic to be there. And, you know, maybe 10 guys were on offense and Kirk was slow to start and he throws an interception. So maybe I'm just making it all about the one throw. But, you know, it was the classic trap game. You know, you come off the road from a tough loss. You're licking your wounds. You're thinking about, you know, possibly thinking about the bye week, even though they're not in a position to do that. But you certainly think that it's something. It's an obstacle you have to overcome psychologically, is not think about what's going to happen after the game. And you also have the team that is winless and they just fired the coach and GM. And so your mind is playing tricks on you about, you know, how urgent you have to be for this game. And they certainly, as the Falcons, come in and they get to play free. They get to just go out there and run around and like, hey, nobody has any expectations for us. And all of a sudden you get a gift interception to start the game. It's like, all right, here we go, boys. We got short field. Let's go put some points on the board. We're going to get the ball back first in the second half and see what we can do there. And so everything just worked out for them. And I think the most frustrating part, at least from my eyes, was the Vikings seemed flat coming out. The interception's thrown. They go down and score. And I think we went 3 and out the next
Correct.
Series. And it's like, if Zim says after the game that we were ready to go. We were going to be, we're going to dial something up. We had a great game plan to get the ball down the field on an opening drive. That's why we won the toss.
Yeah.
I took the ball. Well, do you throw that theory out? Do you throw that game plan out for the second drive?
Mm.
So if that's the, if you didn't do that, then your big explosive start was the three and out in the second series. Like, where was that? Why does the mentality have to be thrown out the window just because on the opening drive didn't work? All right, well, you get a second chance. They get the, you get the ball back. I just didn't understand some of the rationale behind the game after it was over, and in the way it all played out, it just seemed flat. And you know, it was frustrating because that's not what the team is built on. I mean, if anything, lose playing 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Don't lose because you're licking your wounds and feeling sorry for yourself.
Well, is so when you look at this offense, you know, the trend around the league is there are fewer interceptions being thrown. I think it's almost, we're on a record pace, and of course Cousins is the exception to the rule. And then again, you have another key fourth down and one where you go for it, which again I wasn't bothered by, and you get nothing on that. Are you hinting at a belief that part of the issue is maybe we got to get a little bit more sophisticated, or a little bit, I don't want to say zanier exactly, but a little bit more less constipated and less predictable in what we do? Or do you view it, because to me, a lot of this is still just comes down to flat out poor execution.
Well, I there are times where I'm watching the Falcons offense and I'm kind of envious a little bit of kind of their,
yeah,
it's not even creativity, it's just their speed of their execution and how pure some of their execution was to us. And I mean, look at that Hayden Hurst touchdown. Have you ever seen any, I mean, we haven't displayed anything like that this whole season.
No.
Or even if we've attempted to, it hasn't been obvious because it's been a lack of execution. And maybe there is the throwback hide play by the tight end in the playbook. And I'm not saying that we have to display that just to show some creativity, but there's been nothing of that sort, you know. And you go back to that first and goal on the 2 yard line, Justin Jefferson gets him down there, and I'm okay with starting off with two runs to try to pound in there from the 2 yard line. You gotta think that our guys can do that against that defense. But I could have bet my house that we're gonna run a bootleg on the third play. I mean, that was a given, and that play was quickly pulled up by an outside rusher that was free. And you know, Irv still got his two hands on the ball, but then the linebacker comes over and knocks the ball out and makes a good defensive play. But it's like, I could have predicted that play. And then we come back with a weird hurry up quick snap that fooled our own offense and stuff ourselves on fourth down.
Yeah, and it didn't get all that much better. We got the obligatory garbage points later, which we're happy for, but it really didn't have anything to do with the outcome of the game. Before we wrap things up today, you haven't been around this town as long as I have, but you've been around a decent amount now between playing and now doing what you do at this juncture too. Long enough, I would assume, to get a bit of the feel. I mean, you didn't see Sid, what we classified in his prime, but you know, Sid kept going and kept going and kept going. So I'm wondering, when it's somebody who comes in from out of town like you, what your observations were of regarding the Sid phenomenon, because I don't think there's really anybody like him in any other towns that you played in.
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's certainly nothing in San Diego and nothing in that abysmal place of St. Louis I was for a year. I mean, I never saw anything like it, and never, I think, again, will we ever see anybody like that. I mean, people just move around too much. People are too transient.
Yeah.
And you know, on top of how iconic of a broadcaster he was, you know, I heard all the stories about him as a businessman, you know, he was just a grinder, and anything that he could get his hands on, it sounds like he made successful. And I don't know, you know, it's a rarity to find somebody that with that much drive and determination to make everything that he touches into gold. And, you know, truly is special. You know, I think I got here, when I got here was I kind of caught the funny parts of Sid.
Yes.
As far as like, here's this quirky, old guy with this 1920s tape recorder that still works somehow, some way. And he's just going to kind of push his way around in the scrum, and he's going to walk into restricted areas because he can. You know, he's just going to do these things that other people can't. And you're just kind of watching from afar like, man, you really got to be somebody with as tense and as uptight as NFL franchises are about the security and about clearance and about where people can go in certain parts of the building. This dude just shuffled around Winter Park like he owned it. And I'm like, man, this guy's got to be some sort of baller to have that sort of authority to do that. And they did. They just kind of shook their head and they're like, yeah, that's just Sid. He's earned the right to kind of walk wherever he wants to walk and talk to whoever he wants to talk to. And that's special, man. I mean, we'll never see that again. I mean, I don't even think icon or legend is a strong enough word to describe what he meant to broadcasting in general.
Thanks, Lieber. We will chat next week. Enjoy the football the rest of the night. You got a doubleheader now. You're in football heaven, aren't you?
Get that Douglas and Todd right now. There's football.
Oh, that's right. Douglas and Todd. Don't forget.
So pour one out before four.
I know. Okay, so I will pour myself one in about 30 seconds. But what are we? The doubleheader doesn't seem right for football. What can we call it?
Yeah, we do need a name for it. You're right about that.
A name for it. Yeah. I mean, it's not a double doink because that's just a bad connotation,
especially
I mean,
in Chicago. Yeah, for sure. We'll come up with our listeners
right,
are pretty enterprising. They'll find something. We'll have it for you for next week.
All right.
Thanks. Because this might not be the last doubleheader. I think we're learning because we got potentially more COVID cases, and so this pretty much could go on and on and on. The rest of the show, we still got a lot yet to play out. Louie will join us at 4:30. We've got Bob Hagan, media relations maven, Vikings 4:55. Part two with Bud Grant. In the 5 o'clock hour, we've got Royce scheduled for 5:30. When we return, we will chat. First time on air, I think, on the Fan since we went our separate ways. Chad Hartman. It's been of course a very gut wrenching period for Chad, and we will get caught up with him and how he has sort of processed the last 24 to 48 hours, and maybe even a couple of good Sid stories as well.
The Fan.
Sid Hartman, I don't know if it was legal or not, but he'd pick up me and Michael Thompson and Mark Oberding, and we'd go to Oak Ridge and have buffet, or should I say destroy the buffet table out there and on Sundays. And so those are relationships that formed and have always lasted.
Flip Saunders, oh boy, that's still even hard to believe in the current context. Talking about his early introduction to Sid Hartman. Honored today to be joined by Sid's kid, Chad. Got to be a very difficult period of time, and no one would blame Chad if he wanted to maybe get a few quotes in the day of and then just sort of relax a little bit and think about all the things that I'm sure he's thinking about. But he was kind enough to say he would agree to be on with us today. And we very much appreciate the time, sir. How are you? As if that's not a very good opening question.
Well, I'm doing this for two reasons. My respect for you and Garzy, and the overwhelming support that has just come our way because of this remarkable life that my father has led. And I mean, I'm going to start crying from the start here because... here in Flip, it's just, too tough because we picked out some clothes for my father and I made sure to find the Flip pin because of that dynamic. So that just, that brings back somebody we both, all three of us knew so well. So,
you know,
it's just overwhelming, Dan.
Let me ask you something.
In so many ways.
You know, again, the cliche is you say to someone who lives to be 100 years old, and you say, my God, he lived life. He certainly was not cheated. But that doesn't necessarily mean at the moment it happens that it's easy to be philosophical about it or just let it slide off of your back. How has that been for you in terms of how you've processed it? And has it been any different than you thought it might have been or was going to be?
Well, Garzy called me and I told him that. So you're right on. I said, if any of us are lucky to have someone in our life who has been there as long as my father, you know, my father had me older, right? He was 45 when he had me. So I've had 55 years of my father, and he's 100. And I've thought so many times, because he's had these other health scares, some public, some more private, that I should be prepared. But I don't know how you're really prepared, because as I told Patrick last night, and I think it's great you're having Patrick on, you know, and I'll be clear about it again. I mean, COVID, he does not have COVID. He did not have COVID. But he didn't know any other life but the energy, the relentlessness, right? And so when he lost that, when he lost the 6-7 trips, I was so worried. And even one of the last times I saw him when he was better, he was clear, he was good spirits, and he said, give me a hug. And I was so worried. I said, I just don't want to get you sick. I've never tested positive, but I just kept counting on, we're going to turn a little bit of a corner and he could be out there. And it all just happened fairly fast, because I actually was trying to get him to record a video Saturday for Patrick's birthday, and to say something like, hey, you know, we bumped heads, but happy 75th, you know, because everybody hasn't had a chance to see him. I've been inundated with requests. I just thought this would be a way. And he has two lifesavers in his life, Lacey and Larissa, who came in his life after he broke his hip. And Lacey just said, it's just not the day to do it. And she said, your doctor, my doctor and his doctor, Sheldon Burns, was coming over, and maybe to help him out. But it just didn't help him. And then I got a call during the night. And as both you know, I battle insomnia, so I was shocked that I didn't hear it right away. But eventually I did. And I headed over there, and just hearing my voice, this is, you know, 3-4 in the morning, he rallied for a while. And he kept rallying for a while into the morning. And then we were able to get, you know, most of the family over. But just his breathing was compromised. And, you know, that's when he's 100. So I'm still not prepared for it. I'm just still not.
You know, I can go back 25 years and remember conversations that you and I had even then. So then it sounds crazy, but he would be 75 years old then. That one of the things that you and I talked about was the obvious with him was that, because the lifeblood for him was contact, was doing the work, was showing up at meaningless luncheons, media luncheons, hitting locker rooms and so forth, that was the concern even then, that if somehow he had some kind of injury or something changed, he got sick enough where he couldn't do that, that I know even then that was the greatest fear for you, right? Because that was his oxygen here. I mean, there are people who could say, well, he missed it. What if he missed on a lot of other things that he could have done in his personal life? That's immaterial to me. People make decisions and they do what they do, and everybody goes at it a different way. And for him, Chad, that was it, right? I mean, I learned that much about him, that was the thing that was going to keep him going. So when I saw that quote that you gave to Patrick, it brought the COVID-19 thing home in a way that is worth reminding people of the added, shall we say, danger, isolation for people, the mental toll of all of that sort of isolation as well. And so it fits perfectly into what you're saying. That's the saddest part about this of all.
Yeah, and it's ravaged tens of millions.
Right.
You're right. I mean, both of us have ways to get away from our jobs, right? Whether it's family, our own choices, things we enjoy. I would joke a lot, my father, for a number of years, had this beautiful place in Fort Lauderdale on the ocean. And what he did, Dan, is he set up 3 TVs in the corner, and he would watch TV all day. And I would say, what about the beach? The Canucks and Flames are playing later. I got to check out that game, you know, or just some meaningless thing. And I would kid with him, and I'd say, how about we do this? How about we sell the condo, And at your house, I'll have somebody come over and paint the ocean because it just doesn't matter. But that kept him going. You know, yeah. That kept him going. And I heard Bud, and we both have shared this story together for 20, 30 years. He is the most competitive person I've ever met in my life. And it didn't matter if you beat him on a story, somebody else in the paper, or me. And he had this fine line of the competitiveness, but he still, even with all his success, he was insecure. He really was. And I think a lot of that goes to just the upbringing.
Yeah.
And as poor and having his dad was a very serious alcoholic, and they were so broke. And part of the reason why he was selling the papers at 8 is he had to bring money in, you know, and he always worried about that. No matter how successful he was, will the paper let me go? Will the radio station let me go? And he just, he couldn't enjoy, he couldn't relax. And for a long time, that just confounded me. And then at some point, somewhere in the last few decades, I just learned to accept that that just makes him happy and he has to be him, and it allowed him to live, you know, about the maximum he could live out of his life.
Where do you think the relentlessness came from? I think it's you're offering some interesting clues about sort of, you know, the upbringing and that impact it had on insecurity and so forth. But is that also related to just the tirelessness about, I'm going to go after every story, no matter how long it takes me, no matter at what other cost?
I think some of it, you know, and his relationship with his mother was extraordinarily close. You know, he lost his mom, I think it's 1971. I'm just so overwhelmed by things. And he was so close. You know, his dad passed away around the same time, but just because his dad wasn't someone he could count on as much, that he spent a lot of time bailing his dad out or talking his way, because he really wouldn't have that much money to bail his dad out, that I think he always thought of that life. He always thought of how his brothers, Harold and Saul, and his sister Bernice, and how they lived. And it just, there was still something about it for him to wake up, and whether it was to jump on CCO or go somewhere and get the next story, that just brought him the joy that all of us in our jobs can reach a malaise, can reach something where it doesn't satisfy us as much, and we need to find something else, or we just put it on autopilot. I mean, you were around him for thousands of days. I never once saw him on autopilot. I never saw him cruising through anything, and that kept him going. That just, I mean, he loved my kids so much. But I'll tell you a story. My youngest son, who you know well, has health issues, and we're celebrating Q. It must have been his 18th birthday. I know you might have forgot this, but the Wolves actually made the playoffs once. And we were late because of traffic. And we get there a little bit later. My father looks at me and goes, well, we got to hurry this birthday party if I got to get to that Wolves Nuggets game. And I'm like, it's Q's birthday. And he's like, I just can't miss the tip off. You know? And don't get me wrong, he would have given his yes. life a million times for Quentin. I mean, there's just a million times. But again, that game, and as much as you know, the two of us still love the NBA. We're about the last two people to start in that category. But he had to be there.
Yeah.
And he never was going to change.
You know, you mentioned the insecurity. Patrick and I used to have these conversations when he would be mad at us for either something we wrote or something he thought we were about to write or whatever. And that was the great irony of it, is that I would say, and sometimes I'd even say this to Sid, I'd say, Sid, I'm not a threat to you. I'm not even close. They're never going to build me a statue. Now, of course, they hadn't built him a statue yet, but that was inevitable they were going to. I said, what are you worried about? It's just my column. You've got your presentation. You've got your place. I can't touch it. Patrick, who's one of us, can't touch it, as brilliant as his career has been. But insecurity is insecurity, I guess, is the answer, right? Because if that's how you're wired, it doesn't matter if there's a million logical reasons why you should not be threatened by the other people who are working around you.
100%. And, you know, one of your jokes forever, well, he was my guy before your guy. I mean, he'd say that to anybody. He'd say that to me.
Yes.
And, I mean, I'll just give you another example. When he breaks his hip, and he breaks his hip, you know, a few weeks after Quinton had this radical leg surgery, you know, and he had been there every day, and Q wouldn't walk for 5 months. And he breaks the hip, and he still... I mean, the most amazing thing about that day, Dan, is he walked up the stairs at his house with a broken hip at 96. I still can't fathom that. And he comes in, and two people we both know well, Sheldon Burns and Pat Smith, sit me down. And by the time we sit down, it's 2 some in the morning. And if I remember right, I think Pat might have grabbed a drink or something right. And they both said, you have to understand the life expectancy for a man at his age. Well, Dan, the only thing he thought of is how quick he was going to get out of there. And then somewhere in that stretch, PJ Fleck was hired. And he had to be there for one reason. I have to meet PJ Fleck, and I have to get him on my Sunday morning show. And, like, if he wasn't there, he wasn't going to meet him a week later, or the U of M was going to tell him. That is just how he thought every day.
I remember.
That is how he thought every day. And it was that balance of competitiveness, or if I don't get him, hey, Barrero's got a show on Sunday,
yeah,
he might get him. Or Mike Max, mm-hmm, on his station might get him, or Chad, his son, might get him. I have to be there. And it was stupefying at times, and it was just marvelous that he cared so much. We all should find something in our life that my father cared about so much. And I'm talking so much about the job too, but he cared immensely about his family. You know, I heard you ask Bud a great question. What do we not know? You know, people had to see my father around, you know, his 5 grandkids, and he could be so crusty. He could be so curt. But when he was around Justin Kelly and Hunter Griffin and Q, you know, that other side would come out, and that's what the people closest to him saw, but the public just didn't see a lot of.
Well, in more recent years, I don't go to games anywhere as much as I used to, but when I was, that would be the icebreaker with Sid and me. It would be him asking about my daughter. And he was very warm at times like that. And, you know, I was going to ask you about that because he was, as I think you know, he was very mad at me when we split up the two shows.
Yeah.
And I was not offended because it's like, okay, it's his son. I mean, I get that loyalty. But for a long time, man, he was not happy with me. I hope he got over it. I think he got over it at some point later. He even once said, you got a good show. It was kind of like grumbled and it was kind of like muttered,
yeah,
but he kind of said it. But that's the icebreaker for him later with me was he would just ask very earnest questions about Gia. And, you know, to your point, I think there is obviously that side of him that a lot of people are not going to see or not necessarily going to have a chance to see.
Yeah, I mean, twofold. I mean, going back when we went our separate ways, I set him down, you know, when we decided to do that, I remember sitting down and saying, I know you are going to take my side. I know you're going to be irrational about it, but I want you to shut up. I go, we're both going to be fine. We're both, and he couldn't. And he would say, at times, very inappropriate things. And if people could go back and find some Wolves games in 2002, 2003, and if my voice sounded a little weak, it was probably me yelling at him to shut up, you know. But if he was asking about someone's spouse, if he was asking about someone's kids, we both know too many people. Everybody listening knows too many people. And knows when someone does it and it's disingenuous and it's just, okay,
right,
I gotta do it. You know, let me just play along. in particular, if it involved younger children or it involved health, if he could help. His greatest contact base today is still doctors. Doctors. He just wanted to be around every doctor possible. And, you know, there would be times when he had some health issues, which I won't go too much into, over the last few years, where there really wasn't much they could do because he was of his age. But they would still have him come down to the clinic because it made him feel better. And it made them feel better that they would see him. And if they could bring him the peace of mind, and then if he could do something for them, in particular for their kids, that truly meant the world. And as you know, he was inclined to tell you that he'd helped you out about 15 times, but what he did was really legit and was really genuine.
You know, you guys, I don't know how long you guys worked together at CCO, but it was really well done, and it was largely well done because of you, quite frankly, because he's not the easiest guy to interview, obviously. You got to understand his cadence. You got to understand what he's going to ignore, what he's not going to hear, all of that. That's got to be a great source of satisfaction that you got that opportunity as long as you did. It's obviously, it was a natural marriage, and everybody said, well, we got to have this, but you didn't have it for a long time. And I thought your patience with him, which couldn't have always been easy, was extraordinary. And you found a way to not, you know, let your temper get the better part of you. When I know what you're wanting to do is scream at him. That's absurd, Sid. You can't possibly believe that. And you would find a way to push back, but you'd find a way to do it in a way that the conversation would not end.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. I think if people remember when it was somewhere in the 90s where Shaver, Randy, who we both know, did a profile on us, and then we were on Randy's show, Sports Extra, for a number of years. And then we could spar, right? Then we could spar. He still had his fastball.
Right.
But by the time I get to CCO, he's still good. But then there's just a little different. Mm-hmm. And just the last few years, I thought you managed it beautifully too, right? Where you still can joke, you still can needle. But when he's 95, 96, 97, there's just a way to do it. I'll just be blunt. Some people in the media, I hated how they did it. And I just kept remembering, that's my dad. You know, that is my dad, and I'm trying to put him in the best possible position, but I'm also trying to have us spar a little bit in the right way. And I mean, there's obviously an overwhelming amount of things I'm going to remember. And I'm trying to come to grips with all of those. One of the things that's going to bring me a lot of joy on CCO is, you know, we had a big event planned for his 100th.
Yep.
And the money was going to three charities that all benefit kids who have issues like Q. Well, Quentin and I were down in Florida when, you know, Rudy Gobert upset the world. And so the event at Murray's and was canceled, but we surprised him. And we is who you're going to have on for part two in the 5 o'clock hour, bud. And we came in, and the first thing he said, he looked at both of us, Dan, he said, what are you two doing here? And then I forget if I said it or Bud said it. He said, we're going to host the last hour with you. And he looks at me and goes, I hope not. You know, and then he kind of winked at us, right? Then he kind of got it. But that we did that last hour with him, that we did that last hour on air. And then the part that I'm going to remember the most about the end is, you know, it was clear he was taking the wrong turn. And he had been communicating with this periodically, and it wasn't as clear. And it wasn't just as normal malaprop clear. But at some point in the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, I just got close to him and spoke up but tried to tell him in a loving way that I loved you. And I love you, excuse me. And he clearly said back, I love you too. And like all of us in the room, just it was the first time he had communicated that way in a long time. Mm. And I don't know, you know, it's just one of those things where you were in the room and it just, it stood out. And I'm trying not to cry right now because I just go through moments where I just know he's with his mom and he's with his friends. But I was at his house like an hour ago, and it's like, I still don't believe this happened.
Well,
he was just—he was a constant. He was just constantly there for me. Sometimes to my irritation, but
right.
Sometimes and always, no matter when I needed him.
I'm not sure I'm going to help you in the not crying part because I've gotten several emails like this and one text from people. Here's what's fascinating to me about the Sid phenomenon is that not everybody I'm hearing from necessarily loved everything about what he did in terms of his approach and so forth, but what they are noticing about themselves is how emotional, nevertheless, they are about this yeah. moment. And I think it a lot of that speaks to just, like you said, the history, the fact that this is a piece of Minnesota history that a lot of people thought, well, he's going to outlive all of us. He's going to outlive you. He's going to outlive me. And I got one, and I'm not going to say who it's from because I'm not sure if he wants me to, but he reached out to me and he said, when I heard about Sid's passing yesterday, I cried. That had never happened to me before, a non-relative's death. I thought he would live forever, but I guess we're all mortal. I loved the guy. Hope your family is doing well. And I think a lot of people feel that way, regardless of whether they battled with him or whether they say, oh, God, there he goes again.
Yep.
I think it just speaks to the outsized nature of his presence here. Just, you know, undeniable.
Yeah. And I think you're right when you say outside presence, right? Because we do what we do and we've done it for a long time. We both try to dabble outside of sports. My father stays inside sports, but he reached so far outside it that everybody was familiar with him. Didn't have to love him, didn't have to consume him. Could have hung in every word, couldn't wait for the show, couldn't wait for the column, knew the schedule. But he was, unlike you, you're still not a Minnesotan. He was a Minnesotan. He got it.
Yep.
Somehow this guy, who hated winter, is the least athletic person I've ever met in my life, so it's not like he was going to be out there doing the Nordic things, but he represented this state. And when we were unfairly treated, he created that culture. When we were better than people gave us credit for, he was that. When he could give us this information that maybe five other people in the media had already told you, he still would tell it. And I, being in this business and at times looking at him as my peer, most time looking at as my father, he just always was going to be there. And I was with my, you know, ex-wife Kathleen, who you know well, and we were talking today, and it was like, he would work, and he was always there for the kids and my now girlfriend Carla. It was like he was able to do everything, and he wanted to do everything. And I think that's why people, you know, when Puck passed away, I think both of us took a bit of the same tack. And it was like, open up the phone lines. Well, I saw Kirby here. I saw Kirby there. If you took text, how many people ran into my father at some place? Mm. And, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, I can't tell you how many texts or other things I get. Well, your father normally would react to me and I'd say he couldn't hear you, right? And I'm not saying he couldn't be irascible and ornery because he could be. But a lot of times he just didn't hear them, you know? But he just was a part of it. And it's just not me, his son, who doesn't know what to do because he's not here. It's so many others who don't know what to do because he just has been that who they wake up to, who they listen to, and who just brings them a piece of their life that they've only known that it was there.
Chad, I can't tell you how much it means to me for your willingness to come on and share your thoughts and your stories to the degree that you have. I as you know, my respect for you is immense, and I there's a lot of people who still listen to this station, who started listening to this station decades ago when you started putting the thing together, and they're emailing me. The emails are coming in through the roof of how they feel, how emotional they feel, how supportive they are, and how much their thoughts are with you and the family. The same goes for me and for Guardsy as well. Just do the best you can through this, as I know you're doing, and our thoughts will be with you, especially the next several days. Thanks again, man.
Absolutely. My respect for you. You know that. You are the best. I wish you and your family only happiness, and Guardsy's tremendous. And for all the people who reached out, it is the most sincere thank you and genuine belief that all of this is touching me and my entire family. So I thoroughly enjoyed it, Dan.
Thank you again.